Hello, friends. This is Pastor Harley Wheeler with the Broadway United Methodist Church. I'd like to welcome you to this podcast. We're looking at the story of Joseph and his brothers in Genesis. And we're beginning here in Genesis chapter 42. The verses I want to read are from verse 1 through 7. It says, "When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, 'Why do you just keep looking at each other?' He continued, 'I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go there and buy some for us, so that we may live and not die.' And then 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain from Egypt, but Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with the others, because he was afraid that harm might come to him. So Israel's sons were among those who went to buy grain, for the famine was in the land of Canaan also. Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the one who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. 'Where do you come from?' he asked. 'From the land of Canaan,' they replied, 'to buy food.'" Now this story continues and brings together the strands of the story that began with Joseph's brothers becoming jealous of him. Joseph had had dreams that he was one day to be ruler over them all. And they first decided to murder him and then thought better of it, not too much better, and sold him into slavery in Egypt, where Joseph had a number of adventures, but kept seeming to come out on top. Finally, when Egypt was facing a famine and Pharaoh had been troubled by dreams sent from God, Joseph interpreted the dreams and Pharaoh put him in charge of the gathering of extra grain and then the distribution when 7 hard years of famine would come. And so during all that time, we haven't heard too much about what the brothers back in Canaan were doing, what's been going on with them, what has God been doing in their souls. About 22 years has gone by. Well, here is Jacob then. He is in charge of the land of Egypt. He's the governor in charge of the distribution of grain and the selling it to tribes, because the famine is not only in Egypt, but also in the land of Canaan. And so the brothers are brought before Joseph and bow down, just as Joseph's dream had said that they would do. And they do not recognize him. Joseph is privy to the secret, so we're enjoying reading the story along with him, and seeing from Joseph's eyes the brothers all unawares that they are facing Joseph, whom they once hated and thought surely was dead and gone and not even a factor. So first off, there is salvation for these brothers waiting. There is a chance for their conscience to give them a reckoning with what they had done with Joseph, and also a plain salvation that people who are starving would live and not die. Also, these events will finally turn out to giving Israel their sojourn in Egypt, where they will grow into a great and mighty nation. But Joseph sees the brothers, and as you see, he is a quick thinker. And so he doesn't reveal himself to them. He speaks harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" "I'm from the land of Canaan," they are. Back where the story began, almost. And they've come to buy food. We do note also that Joseph's brother Benjamin, who is also dearly loved by their father Jacob, is still living, and Jacob has not allowed them to take Benjamin along with them. He doesn't want anything to happen to them. So we have Jacob's great grief over Joseph brought back into the picture. And so we want to continue the story to see what happens. In verse 8 says, "Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams about them and said to them, 'You are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected.' 'No, my lord,' they answered, 'your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. Your servants are honest men, not spies.' 'No,' he said to them, 'you have come to see where our land is unprotected.' But they replied, 'Your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more.' Joseph said to them, 'It is just as I told you, you are spies, and this is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies. and he put them all in custody for 3 days. So now we see that Joseph is indeed in charge of the situation, and seemingly also being guided by the wisdom that God has given him, and a sure hand at discovering the truth of the matter. He is, of course, thinking about a number of things. The status of his father. Is his father still alive? And about his brother. Because if the other 10 brothers had been so hostile to Joseph, what might they have done in the meantime to Benjamin? You kind of gather that Joseph wants to find out what's gone on with Benjamin. Is he safe? Before he proceeds any farther, one of the things that begins to be said in here is the brothers declaring that they're honest men. The statement about being honest. Are the honest men? This is how you will prove you are honest men. And finally, later on, to Joseph seeing that they are honest men in one of the chapters to follow, it brings up, well, are these brothers honest? Again, this is a story that the Jews carried with them through the whole of Old Testament times and into the New. And it is a story that emphasizes them that brothers are to take care of brothers. The Jews were part of many tribes, with one common ancestor. But would they act like brothers? Would they act like relations? Would they understand that they have a special duty of care and concern for one another? Are they indeed honest men? Have they learned the lesson of brotherhood? And so now we find them put in prison, given some hard times. We have the idea that they went back home, and except for the fact that their father never seemed to get over the grief over his losing his son Joseph, that he never seemed to live without fear and without this burden of what else might happen wrong. these brothers have had it all their own way. They didn't want Joseph there, and Joseph has not been there. But now they land themselves in prison. Joseph also is making quite a reasonable case. If 10 grown men show up at the borders, Egypt did have a question about security. Joseph would be in charge of that. In other words, what he is saying is quite plausible to say, you are spies. It does not come out of the blue. These 10 men actually could have been representing 10 cities, 10 nations, 10 completely unrelated tribes. They're not tribes now. They're the fathers of the tribes of Israel, but they are just now 10 brothers. If they're representative of, say, 10 or a number of tribes, they might come to the borders of Egypt to check things out, to find out weaknesses, to see how stricken the nation was in the famine, and come back and raise war. In fact, their story of being 10 brothers, all the sons of one man, even in a day when it was common for men such as Jacob to take more than one wife, it would seem to be of a long stretch of a story. And as we know, when people come and are looking for help, and are strangers to us, we are not comforted when their story seems to be somewhat implausible. So Joseph making this demand of them and treating them with suspicion, it doesn't come to the brothers, it doesn't strike them as something completely out of the blue or unprecedented. Joseph being very wise, and we enjoy his wiliness in getting the truth out of his brothers and letting them stew in their own juices a bit as he determines indeed whether they are honest men. Verse 18 begins, on the third day, Joseph said to them, do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison, while the rest of you go and take grain back for your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me, so that your words may be verified, and that you may not die. This they proceeded to do. They said to one another, surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life. But we would not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us. Reuben replied, didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. They did not realize that Joseph could understand them, since he was using an interpreter. He turned away from them and began to weep, but then turned back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. Now the rabbis, in looking at these verses, they speculated that it was Simeon himself who had once bound Joseph on that fateful day when they'd uh, first determined to kill him and then sold him into slavery. And so there's a certain amount of justice being done. We must understand that the brothers have had something on their conscience for 22 years. Now, if you read a lot of crime or detective fiction, you understand that that's part of the story, that the guilt or the chance of retribution never goes away when someone has committed a murder, and it can drive a person's story. Now, this fiction represents a truth about our lives, as most good fiction does. We don't really escape the consequences of our sin. The one who has committed a great crime has to always wonder if there is an avenger of some sort, either the law or someone who wants to take revenge over the murder of another, if this is not following them. This was easily a concept that the ancient world knew about, because it's a common thread to every culture that I know of that has writings from the distant past on to today. You have to worry about vengeance. You have to worry about what will actually be the harvest of the wrong deeds you have done. And so for us, we have this certain question of, have our consciences finally dealt with us as they should? Have we repented of our sin? Have we recognized some of the things we've done that are wrong? These brothers had been about 22 years since the time that they did away with Joseph. And if you had looked at them from day to day, you might have supposed that they weren't troubled in their consciences at all. Well, now they are truly troubled in their hearts. And they are also saying to themselves, we have brought this on ourselves. They're saying the honest truth. And Reuben, whether he has entirely the standing to tell his brothers, well, I told you not to do it, is speaking for the heart of each man that could look at someone who they were mistreating, in this case, their brother Joseph, and see that they had a responsibility to be merciful, to be kind, to turn away from the hard deed that they did. And that voice was always there, whether Reuben really speaks truth or not. It is a case that in a time like this, people who are beginning to suffer for something they've done wrong, if they've done it as a group, will begin to blame themselves. And so this all takes place before their eyes. Joseph, to make sure that the deception, that they have no idea that he is Joseph, who has now become ruler of Egypt, has been using an interpreter. It was common enough that Egyptians and those that lived in Canaan had dealings with one another. They could understand one another pretty well, although in the writings that survived from that time, you find documents translated in Egyptian script and characters and language, and the same document copied over in Aramaic. What you do find is that Joseph here doesn't have to deal directly with these vagabond brothers. He is a great ruler of Egypt. He can point to his servant to tell them what he wants them told, and that servant will then respectfully tell him what they said, even though we so enjoy it. He is following what they said all the time. And you see, if Joseph hasn't lost his affection for his brothers, his heart is moved to see them moved to sorrow over what they did. Verse 25 continues, Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to put each man's silver back in his sack, and to give them provisions for their journey. After this was done for them, they loaded their grain on their donkeys and left. At the place where they stopped for the night, one of them opened his sack to get feed for his donkey, and he saw his silver in the mouth of his sack. My silver has been returned, he said to his brothers. Here it is in my sack. Their hearts sank, and they turned to each other trembling and said, what is this that God has done to us? Well, what is it when one has got on the wrong side of God? You are afraid, actually, at every turn, whether it is finally the punishment you so deserve. Do you understand that Christians recognize all this, our great guilt? Are the things that we have done that if it was set up where someone could stand up at the judgment and accuse us, there would be those people. Joseph has even brought before them the concept, you know, he fears God. Even for strangers, he will not send one of them home alone where they certainly might not ever arrive, but keep just one as a testimony to their good faith, or hostages, if you will. And the others may return and could do so in safety if indeed they're honest men. We find this other turn of events. They're treated kindly. They're given provisions for their journey. and their money is put back in their sacks. So Joseph doesn't profit from the brothers, whatever they might have feared about Joseph's dream saying that he would rule over them. It wasn't to have their stuff or to get in their way, but is the best kind of authority being exercised, authority that is under the plan of God and permits us to walk in his unfolding will. So my friend, we must pause and say, have you understood the depth of your own guilt? Have you reached out to Christ for forgiveness? Has your conscience worked in your life? The next verse is beginning at 29. When they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them. They said, "This man who is lord of the land spoke harshly to us and treated us as though we were spying on the land. But we said to him, 'We are honest men, we are not spies. We were 12 brothers, sons of one father. One is no more, and the youngest is now with our father in Canaan.' Then the man who is lord over the land said to us, 'This is how I will know whether you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me and take food for your starving households and go. But bring your youngest brother to me, so I will know that you are not spies, but honest men. Then I will give your brother back to you, and you can trade in the land.' As they were emptying their sacks, there in each man's sack was his pouch of silver. When they and their father saw the money pouches, they were frightened. Their father Jacob said to them, 'You have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more. And now you want to take Benjamin. Everything is against me.'" Now, we who are used to, well, we kind of say we like our story shortened to the point, although that's not entirely true, because any given person you might meet has spent just hours listening to people yammer on about the news, repeating the same point over and over and over, and making points that have long explanations that hardly make sense. This is a good way of telling the story. If it's being told orally, certainly the story was written down, but if it's being told orally, if it's being read out loud to a group, you hear the word honest men talked about again, that they go back to Jacob, their father, and this lifts up Jacob's position in all this and realizes that his grief is real. Jacob would be, of course, the patriarch for all the people of Israel, their ancestor. They would talk about being sons of Jacob, and so he might be lifted up to a superhuman kind of standing, but now he is demonstrating very human grief. And this cry, "Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, now you want to take Benjamin." Consider people who saw son after son go off to war, two of them not coming back and fearing for a third. This is that grief that so many have had. Jacob speaks in a way that we understand that he feels a real grief. And it brings to their brothers this concept that they have brought tears to their father. And so they also understand that it's not only just one brother that has had his money returned to them, but all of them. So they have been under suspicion. They have made their statement as best they can, but are under strict conditions if they're ever to go back again, if Simeon is ever to be released from prison. And now they could fairly be accused of stealing grain from Egypt, and a powerful man in Egypt who owes nothing to these brothers, what might he do? Indeed, if they were found to have been thieves, if the accountings were done, and it was known that these so-called brothers from Canaan had not paid for their grain. Now we come to the close of the chapter, verse 37. Then Reuben said to his father, "You may put both of my sons to death, if I do not bring him back to you. Entrust him to my care, and I will bring him back." But Jacob said, "My son will not go down there with you. His brother is dead, and he is the only one left. If harm comes to him on the journey you are taking, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in sorrow." So now it is not easy to deal with an older relation, a father or a mother, who is deep in grief, who is consumed indeed, with some good reason, with anxiety and fear. And so the very, very, heavy weight of what the brothers did when they connived against Joseph, the sorrow they brought to their father is spoken loudly here. And of course, Jacob has been carrying on like this, where the brothers might have hoped, well, you know, Jacob will be excited about having 11. He'll soon forget that Joseph that he seemed to like so much. But no, Jacob, on the one hand, being somewhat unwise, he seems to have had a favorite wife and favorite sons, which might be one of the sources of all this problem. But also, he has continued to loudly lament his grief. In other words, though, people might have been sensible and said, well, a year, maybe a little more to mourn for one who was lost. But we lose people all the time. You need to go on. Jacob will not have any of it. Again, these stories that are true stories reminded the Israelites that they are brothers. They are family. And their life in Canaan, their life as God's people when they leave Egypt and go forth to the promised land, is a life that depends not only on their devotion to God, but in devotion to God, a recognition that they are brothers one to another. They are all related. They're family. Now, Reuben's statement is an interesting one. We might pause and understand that even though Reuben says, okay, we can handle it this way, this is what we're going to do. You can, but then he says, you can kill two of my sons if I don't bring back Benjamin and obviously Simeon, 2 for 2. And first off, people will say, well, is that praiseworthy? He can say, well, you can kill two of my sons. In the standards of the time, it is the sort of thing that one would say. I hold my responsibility here so carefully that someone who also is dear to me, his life will be forfeit. But we understand that he is also not quite there. The Christian morality, and indeed the fully formed Jewish understanding, would say, no, my life for theirs. Reuben will come to that. One of the brothers will stand and will say, you may kill me if I do not bring Benjamin home safely. But Reuben first now is saying out loud, I am responsible for this, my brother. And that is progress indeed. So we find the brothers through the very difficult task of having a reckoning with their conscience, with being, frankly, very afraid, with seeing again the grief that they caused their father. They're moving to a place of repentance. They're also moving to a place of moral responsibility. Are they honest men? Well, they are well on their way. And so I hope you've enjoyed this chapter. Hope your conscience works. Don't be afraid of the workings of conscience. Don't just quickly say, well, one shouldn't work by guilt and shame and that. Well, guilt and shame help us to understand our obligations to one another and our true status as living images of God in his world. God speaks to us in the most innermost parts of our heart through our conscience. And that is a very precious thing indeed. And so we're going to conclude here. This has been Genesis chapter 42 of this podcast, Joseph and His Brothers. I hope you'll join us again for the next podcast as we look in Genesis chapter 43. Thanks, and God bless. Thank you.